Say good evening. Tuesday evening, February 5th. This is Rabbi Feldman's shiur. Tonight's shiur is sponsored by Minna and Jeff Heilpern in memory of their parents, Phyllis and Sydney Horowitz, and Riette and George Heilpern.
Good evening. I'd like to speak a little bit about a topic from Parshas Mishpatim. To continue our Mishpatim umbrella here, a little bit before, a little bit after, particularly the topic of Nezikin, in general, of damages. And before we get into that, it's interesting, as Al-Pi Darach HaDrush, we have to speak a little bit about the strategies of dealing with the Yetzer Hara. And there's an interesting comment to the Slonim Rebbe, who discusses the concept of Nezikin, and especially a line that the Gemara has in the Sachas Baba Kama. It's a very interesting idea in general. The Gemara tells you what to do if you want to be a chassid. And this is, of course, not talking about Baal Shem Tov. This is a couple of centuries before. If you want to be a pious person, if you want to be a genuinely religious person, so what do you have to do in order to be a chassid? So the Gemara has a couple of different opinions. You know, as a high man, the boy, the heavy chassid, a person who wants to be a chassid, perhaps he should learn Milei de Brachos. He should learn the topic of Brachos and how to praise God. It's easy to understand how that's a portal to spirituality. There's an important sefer on the Sechus Brachos called Milei de Brachos based on that. Another opinion in the Gemara is that he should learn Milei de Avos. Sounds like it's a reference to the Sechus Avos, the Perkei Avos. It's again, it is easily understood as a method of developing one's spirituality. And the most surprising of the three is that the Gemara says, L'kayim Milei de Nezikin, that he should be involved in the study of damages. He should be involved in civil tort law. If he studies that, if he's involved in that, that will be a path towards chassidus. So what exactly does that mean, as a path towards chassidus? That's a good question. A couple of different ways to understand it. And the Slonim Rebbe has a comment in the Sefer in the Neshiva Shalom, in which he suggests that maybe this is a reference to a symbolic theme that we see in the Arba Avos Nezikin, that the Mishnah tells us that by the most famous count there are four Avos Nezikin. I say the most famous count because that's the first line of the Mishnah Bava Kama, Mishnah Bava Kama, which introduces the whole subject of damages. So the first words of Maseches Bava Kama, you know, the history used to be that the three big Maseches that we have, Bava Kama, Bava Metzi, and Bava Basra, it's together add up to about a little more than 400 blocks. It used to be one big Masechta by the title of Nezikin. And it was too big, so we broke it up into three Masechtas, first gate, middle gate, and the last gate. So Bava Kama, the first mission of Bava Kama, is the first mission of what used to be the whole huge Seder of Nezikin. And that begins Arba Avos Nezikin. There are four general categories of Nezikin. And if you go further in the Gemara, you see that there are actually other opinions. There could be many more categories of Nezikin. But the way the Mishnah tells us, at least at first, is that there are these four. And those four, we'll machloket had to translate some of the words also, but roughly speaking, what they add up to is Hashor, Vahabor, Hamava, Vahahever, which, taking at least one way of translating, is reference to Hashor, an ox, Habor is a pit, Hamava is the way, according to one opinion in the Gemara, is the tooth, if an animal eats something, the chain, and Hahever, a fire. And the Slama Rebbe suggested that these four represent four different approaches the Yetzer Hara takes, and that each one is meant to reflect a different path. On the one hand, there is, let me deal with the last two first, that Hamav v'Hahever, the tooth and the fire, so the tooth represents the type of Achila. You want to eat, you want to consume, so that's the Yetzer Hara. That's one of the types of attitudes and instincts that leads humanity astray. And however, the fire represents a different type of fire, represents the fire of passion. People are pulled astray by that fire, by that type of passion. That's what however is meant to represent. And the first two, Hashor and Habor, are two opposites that could be equally damaging. That Hashor represents pride. And we find this kind of imagery in various places throughout Tanakh. And the Talmud tells us that Hashor is the proudest of the animals, the ox is the proudest of the animals. So Hashor represents powerful, strong image. And Abor represents the opposite. Abor is a pit. You fall into a pit, you fall down. And that's the Yetzer Hara, really, of shiftless. That's when a person is pulled away by his sense of being low. And we know the famous two approaches of Musa, Slobodka and the Vardik, which today really none of the extremes of the original Musa schools really exist in their extreme form. Nowadays things have kind of been mixed together and moderated a little bit. But once upon a time there were two dominant schools of Musa, Slobodka Musa, which talks about the godless Adam, which is meant to inspire us by telling us that we're great and we have tremendous potential. And therefore counteracting the idea of shiflus, counteracting the feeling that we're so low that we're not worth anything. And on the other hand, there was the Nevada school, and the Nevada school was all about that, yeah, we're not worth anything. We're all on the floor, we're nothing, and therefore we gotta be picked up, and therefore we shouldn't get too proud of ourselves, and that's the Yitzhahara of the shore. And you think you're too proud, so you have to have that counteracted. And the truth is, these values really need to be balanced. That's the idea of the famous Chassidus Avot, that you walk with two statements in each pocket. On the one hand, you have B'shvili Nivra Olam, that the world was created for me, and on the other hand, Anochi Ofer Ofer, I'm just dust and just dirt and there's nothing. And those two are supposed to be in balance. B'shechter in the Sefer Tzini Harav quotes from the Soloveitchik the idea that that's represented in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, the concept that we were talking about, that really our series of chesed that went from until recently all the way back to Parshas Vayera. So in the very beginning of Parshas Vayera, we're really introduced to a lot of the principles of chesed in a big way. And part of it is that Avram is in the middle of a dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is visiting him in his state of sickness, and he interrupts in order to go welcome the angels. And the Gemara says, based on that Avram did the right thing, apparently, and it's a whole discussion, how did he know what to do, but this idea of welcoming the angels was the right move. And the Gemara says in the Masechta Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chaf Zayin that you see from there that Gedola Hakbalas Orchem Yosem Yehwelf Neshchina, Gedola Hachnasas Orchem Yosem Yehakbalas Neshchina. The welcoming guests is even greater than being in dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's an interesting statement, and it's also a question whether this reflects itself in halacha at all. So Rav Shechter quotes from the Rav Pnimi Harav that this idea really represents the fact that humanity is great, that there is a concept of kavod habrios, and that humans have this infinite dignity, and therefore Avram recognized that dignity, and all of his chesed was a reflection of that. And the fact that he interrupted to go take care of people and to maintain their dignity, that was the test that he was supposed to pass. And that was how HaKadosh Baruch Hu said right after that, I know that he's the type of person who's going to transmit to all the future generations how to be a person of chesed. So does this reflect itself in halacha? Yeah, he says that it reflects itself in the din. The Mishnah says in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos that if one is in the middle of Kriyas Shema and he has to greet someone, there's different categories, he has to greet a king, he has to greet a normal person, whatever it is, in the middle of the paragraph, between the paragraphs, responding, different circumstances, different rules. But the basic idea is that Kriya Shema, which is our fundamental acceptance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, nonetheless is interrupted in order to greet somebody, in order to greet a human being. So that's a reflection of the same idea of Avraham Avinu interrupting his dialogue with Hashem in order to greet people. So it manifests itself with halacha in this idea of interrupting Kriya Shema to greet people. But as you see, you don't see it everywhere, because at the same time the Mishnah tells us in Brachos and Daf Lamed that if one is in the middle of Shemone Esrei, so he doesn't interrupt for anything, short of possibly in a sort of actual pikuach nefesh, but other than that, it doesn't interrupt for anything. So why does that halacha not manifest itself there? It only represents itself in Kriya Shema and not in Shemone Esrei. So there he suggests, because we have this constant balance, that on the one hand we have the motif of, as we write in Hebrew, motif of humanity having this infinite dignity which has to be expressed, and therefore Kriya Shema will give way to greeting human beings. And at the same time, we also have the sense that we're all bottled to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, and therefore the time of Shemone Esrei, that theme has to be emphasized, and that's not going to be interrupted for almost anything. So that constant balance that we're striking between these two values is represented by the fact that sometimes we emphasize one, sometimes we emphasize the other, and therefore Kriya Shema is one, and Shemone Esrei is the other. And both of those aspects are represented there. And this is perhaps also represented by the fact that we find a very strange language that Chazal have in the beginning of Parshas Ki Savo. So we have the different recitations that people say when they bring Maaser, when they bring Bikurim. And Chazal used the phrase vidui in talking about this. It's called the confession. And if we read the psukim, we've all heard this question before, we read the psukim in the beginning of Kisavu, it doesn't sound like a confession at all. sounds very much like you're quite proud of yourself. You're saying, I've done everything that I've been instructed to do. I didn't mess up anything, I didn't forget anything, I'm perfect. So where do you find any kind of a confession there? So one could perhaps suggest, and I think the Soloveitchik said something very much along these lines, that the term vidui, which we use to mean confession, doesn't exactly mean saying I'm bad. The term vidui is a reference to speech that is a vehicle towards tshuva. Speech is a vehicle towards change and towards growth. So most of the time you're saying, yes, I'm bad, I'm a loser, I messed up. And most of the time you're counteracting your sense that everything's fine. You're counteracting your sense that everything's perfect. And therefore, in order to provoke yourself to change, in order to move yourself towards tshuva, so you have to tell yourself you're not so great. You have to bring up the subject of everywhere where you messed up, where you left out something, where you didn't do things right. And that's the vidui that we're more familiar with. But the vidui that we find in the beginning of Kisavo is telling us that there's something else. There's also a different type of Yetzer Hara that can lead us astray. Because sometimes we could say, listen, I know I'm not great. I know that I don't do the right thing, and I know that I haven't been what I should. But I'm not capable of anything better. I'm not capable of ever defeating this Yetzer Hara. So therefore, there's also a type of vidui where you say, look, I've done everything right. I didn't forget anything. And if I'm capable of doing everything right now, I have to recognize I'm capable of doing everything right beyond this. And therefore, that's also a type of vidur. That's also a method towards change. So this is, again, a reflection of these two values, which is what the Nesiva Solomon is saying, is reflected in Habor v'Hashor, these first two of the Avos Tzadikim, and that's what the Gemara means. The Gemara says, you want to be a chassid, you want to be a firm person, so then you shall learn the Milei D'Tzadikim, you shall learn how to conquer these two different aspects, and let that all reflect your goal towards being a chassid, towards chassid. That's the message of Avraham Avinu, the embodiment of chassid is a chassid, and that's taught through the concept of Tzadikim, which means in a broad schematic sense, that idea that the Rebbe expresses. But of course, in a more literal sense, it represents the fact that we have a sensitivity towards other people's property, that we have a sensitivity towards other people's needs, and other people's rights, and that's also what really is at the root of Nezikin. And that really gets us into what I'd like to focus on tonight, the fact that there is something very unusual. The concept of Nezikin provokes a lot of interesting discussions, because it's good to talk about this after the parsha rather than before the parsha, because we can say, okay, now we've read parsha's mishpatu, we listened to the whole thing, and we heard all the different rules of nezikin, all these arba avos. It's hard to find them exactly in the psukim, but they're all indicated in the psukim that we read, and we found out what happens if we damage somebody's property, so we have to pay for it, we have to make restitution, under which terms, how we do it, what are the circumstances. What we don't find anywhere in the parsha, apparently, is anywhere that it says that we're not allowed to do this. It doesn't say anywhere in parsha's mishpatim in the context of telling us what we have to pay. So it doesn't seem to say anywhere that we're not allowed to do it. So one might come to the conclusion that I could come up to your car with a sledgehammer and I could smash your windshield in, and I could say, it's okay, I've got my checkbook here, I'm ready to pay, so I'm fulfilling everything the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim, I'm ready to pay for the damages, and I had a good time, so you can't complain against me. So is that true? Can you do that? Is it really the case that there isn't any prohibition of Nezikin, all there is an obligation to pay, but the act itself is permitted? It's very hard to say that way. And as much as it offends the instinct to say that way, it also offends the sources. There are enough sources, at least in later sources, which do state in the Mishnah Zikah and the Rambam in a couple of places in the Mishnah Torah, makes it clear that it's not only something you pay for, but also Isaac, that it's prohibited. And there are a couple of other sources where it comes out, at least in one way or another. For example, there's Rashba, his commentary to Maseches Bava Kamma and Daf Gimel, where the Rashba explains the Gemara is talking about the difference that we read about in the Parsha between a Shor Tam and a Shor Mu'ad. There's a Shor that's established as a damaging Shor, so we call a Shor Mu'ad, and then there is a simple Shor, a Shor that has not yet been proven to be a violent Shor, and a Shor Tam, I'm not obligated to pay as much. whatever the rules are, you pay a lower rate for the tam than you pay for the mu'ah. So there's a statement in the Gemara where the Gemara makes it sound like if we're not sure what the rules should be, so by default we assume mu'ah. We assume the higher rate. So the Rashba says, why should I assume the higher rate? If I don't know if I have to pay something, normally the rule is that safek mamma lahakil, that I'm allowed to be lenient, but I'm not sure if I have an obligation to pay. And we say, amotzi michaveir olavaraya, that if somebody wants to take money out of me, he's got to come and prove that I owe it to him. So why should the default position be that I pay the higher rate? The default position should be that you pay the lower rate. So says Rashba, that's because here we're dealing with a safek issue. And we're dealing here with a possible violation of Torah law, so therefore we go lahachmer. So again, the implication seems to be that there is some prohibition here. It's not just a question of paying debt, it's a question of something you're not allowed to do, and therefore we use that rule of safek. In addition, there is a Gemara in the beginning of the second parak of Kedusha, where the Gemara talks about all the rules of shlichus, about having an agent, an emissary, do something on your behalf. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing, when it traces back to you and when it doesn't trace back to you. So in that context, the Gemara tells about the rule of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, that if somebody does a transgression, as an emissary is me, so it's his bad luck. Under normal circumstances, it doesn't trace back to me. You're responsible for your own mistakes. You do something wrong, so under normal circumstances, you can't say it's his fault. It's your obligation not to do it. So the Gemara that gives an example of somebody who takes a torch and goes and burns down somebody's field on somebody else's say-so, and uses this principle, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. So apparently, it's an Aveira that he's not allowed to do, and it's not just a question of paying it back. Even though one could say maybe it's an Aveira Drabbanan, that's still possible, because presumably the rule applies even if it's Drabbanan, but that's also an indication that there is an Aveira. And the Bach quotes from the Mordechai that somebody who damages somebody's property would be disqualified from Aedus for testifying, something we talked about briefly last week. So that's another indication that we're talking about a prohibition, not simply that there's an obligation to pay, but that there's a prohibition involved. So what is the prohibition? So where do we find it? So this is why the discussion is really quite fascinating, and it's an almost ironic twist on this idea of Haman Deboy Lemhavi Chassid Lekhaim Ezin Ezekin, that if you want to be a chassid, so it's worth learning Ezekin, because just this one question of what is the prohibition of Mazik forces us to go through many of the principles that are conducive to chassidus, that are conducive to piety. So we'll see there are quite a number of suggestions, and you get to take a nice little tour through a lot of the inspiring ideas that help us be sensitive to each other. So the subject of the Zikin is very much a fulfillment of what the Gemara is saying if you want to be a chassid. So what are some of the possibilities? So the Stifler and his Sefer and Bava Kamis right off the bat, so I'll tell you what's not the answer. I'll tell you one thing that we're going to throw out. It's not the right answer. So it's Malpashlis. So you might think Malpashlis, you know, we're not allowed to waste things. That's the prohibition of the Torah from Paishas Shoftim. So you might think that's the answer. He says that's not the answer. How does he know it's not the answer? He says because, first of all, Malpashlis applies even to your own stuff. So we would say that it should be an issue of Mazik even if it's your own things. And second of all, Malpashlis is also permitted if it's for a good purpose. If it's something that you can get more value out of, so then Batashkas doesn't apply. So maybe I should say that they're probably better off smashing your car for whatever reason. It'll benefit me, so it should be permitted to do it. So for those reasons, Batashkas is clearly not a good enough answer. We have to throw that out right away. That's not going to help us. I was wondering if that's not necessarily the case. I don't know if you necessarily have to throw out Baltashkos completely. I don't know if this will be the answer either, but there is what to say about Baltashkos being relevant to this discussion. Because again, let's focus on what it is we're trying to understand here. If we talk about somebody comes with a hammer and smashes somebody's window. So we know already that he's chayav to pay. The question is, why is it prohibited to do this? So we'll look at Baltashkos, and we can have this discussion more at a separate time, but there's a lot to discuss about what is the motivating factor behind Baltashkos. Why is it that Baltashkos is prohibited? So it sounds like from the Sefer Athena that the issue with Baltashkos is that it's dead to your midos, that a person shouldn't train himself to be involved in destroying things. Well, Yadavik Bahashchas is the language he uses. A person is going to get in the habit of smashing things. It's not a good way to be. It's not good for your soul. So it's not so crazy to say that that's the idea here also. We've already established that there's a monetary debt. The question is, what's wrong with wantonly destroying things if you're ready to pay for them? So maybe that is the answer. This midah of Baal Tashlis, the quality that Baal Tashlis is meant to prevent, is also involved here in this type of wanton destruction. And Hanami, so it would apply to your stuff also. But your stuff you wouldn't have to pay, so it's not part of the parchment spot, you don't have to pay yourself if you do it to somebody else. So it's also the same type of Baal Tashlis as your own stuff, and you have to pay the guy. So I don't know if it's that crazy to say. And it's also very much of a spirit with the Rush. The Rush in his Tshuvas doesn't quote Baal Tashlis, but the Rush says, why is it that it's prohibited? Says it's quote the pasuk not from Chumash, says Tirachar Darchenon B'chol Mitzvos VeHashalom, which is often quoted in various contexts. The Gemara has a couple of usages. The latest form have various usages in which Tirachar Darchenon is brought into the discussion. So I believe the Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness. So therefore what? So usually when it's used to mean that the mitzvos of the Torah don't put you in a position where you have to do something that's against human sensitivities. But here we're saying something else. It's a different type of usage that the Rush is using. It's saying that the way of the Torah is not to be this way. It's not to be a violent type of person. So again, as a source from the Torah, it's not a pasuk in Chumash that states to break Kabbalah, but it's not so different from saying that it shares the midah with Baal Tashlis. The Baal Tashlis is about not being destructive, and it's again derechad achenom. So I don't know if it's such a crazy thing to say. It seems to be very much of a spirit with the source that the Rush is giving. Hi.
Simply by an unmortal pain, suffering,
but you know, you hassle someone.
So even though you're paying for it, you know, it's gonna be a while where it's still, the wind is coming in, you have to get
something. Right, so that,
I mean, all that
kind
of stuff is...
So the wind coming in might in theory be factored in. It's a little bit of a complicated equation, how to factor in stuff like that. But in general, the guy is suddenly disturbed. Right, which relates a lot to what we spoke about last week. You know, last week we spoke about the idea of stealing with intent to pay back. So even though you're paying it back, so he's going to get his bank account's not going to be any different. But the fact that he was robbed is annoying, is irksome, and is harmful. So that's factored in. So in a sense, there shouldn't be any different than that. So that's certainly true, and it's going to come out in some of the other aspects that we're going to talk about. I think you're going to include some of these other elements. So we'll see how some of these other parts come into play as well. Another source that's often quoted is the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah in his commentary to Pirkei Avos in the second Dibra Maschul Moshe. Moshe Kibbutz Torah B'Sinai, first Mishnah Pirkei Avos, so there's two Moshe Dibra Maschuls over there. So the second one, Rabbeinu Yonah writes that Lo Sigzol is the source. Now you're not allowed to steal, and this is a type of stealing. Now I think it's a big fetish because there's a lot of discussion to have about this, which we won't get into tonight. But Gzela, one could think that gezeila means to cause somebody a loss so that you have it, to take somebody's thing so he doesn't have it and you do. The idea that causing somebody a loss and you don't get anything out of it, that that's called gezeila, is a chiddush. And in fact, it's such a chiddush that that's actually Rabbeinu Yonah's point. That's his whole point over there. Why is he commenting on those signals on the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? Because there the Mishnah says, Moshe kibbutz Torah Mesinai. And the whole idea of the tradition that Moshe transmitted the Torah through the generations down to us. And there Rabbeinu Yonah says that we know that it's very important that we have a Rabbi, we have a Mesorah, because we wouldn't know everything from the Chumash itself. We would read the Chumash, and we wouldn't know all the details. So we would read, for example, so we read Bo Sigzal, we wouldn't know that it includes also damaging people's property. So his whole point is that it's a Chiddush. So how does he know it? I'm not sure. So how does he know that Bo Sigzal does extend to damaging property? Not 100% sure, because his whole point is that it's a chiddush. There are other indications, like this is the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which sounds like that a little bit. Like so, so this is just parenthetically, there are other sources that kind of, in a roundabout way, kind of indicate that point. So it could be it's true that Gzela maybe is not limited only to taking something to keep, but even causing somebody the loss of money, which I guess is the reverse of what we talked about last week. And there you were taking something and not causing them a loss. Here you're causing them a loss without taking it. Maybe that is also a type of gzeila. There's a round like that also. The round of Mesachas of Sanhedrin says that Nezikin or Chavala, he speaks of Chavala is wounding a person as opposed to Nezikin to an object, Chavala to a person. There he says it's prohibited not only for Jews but for non-Jews as well, because he says the subset of Gezeila. That's exact. Gezeila is one of the seven mitzvahs for Neinoach. So too, Chavala and Nezikin are all subsumed within that. So it's apparently of a piece with this Rabbeinu Yonah that this is also involved in Gezeila. Another possibility, and I think this is perhaps most closely connected to what you were suggesting, and this has probably occurred to us who are saying this, is the idea that it's a problem of Yahapurefa Kamoka. And the Yad Ramah writes, this is one of two possibilities in his commentary above Bava Basra, that we know the Torah says that you're not allowed to, well, rather the Torah says in a positive sense, that you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And I think we discussed a few weeks ago, I think it came up, that's a whole Torah, what exactly that means. Such a fundamental principle of Judaism that I call Gadol B'Torah, but it's impossible on its face. To translate the words, it's not really possible to do. You can actively love your neighbor the same way you love yourself. What does kamocha mean? It means the same effort that you expend towards yourself and towards your family, you're going to expend towards everybody else. You don't do that to even one person. You don't feed your neighbor's children just like you feed your own children. You don't do the same effort towards any other one person that you do for yourself. So to have to l'reicha kamocha is very difficult. That it means it in a positive sense. A lot of discussion what kamocha could possibly mean if we're referring to the Haslarecha kamocha as a positive imperative, which is the way the Rambam and most Rishonim probably seem to understand it, that it is a positive mitzvah. But because of that difficulty, there are those, and Ramban opens the door to this, but this is more explicitly expressed by later Svarim, that we can see it as a low sefer. We can see it essentially as a lav, based on the formulation of Hillel and the Gemara and the Sefer Shabbos. That which is hateful to you, don't do it to your neighbor. So we understand it as a prohibition, that the things that you wouldn't want somebody to do to you, so you also shouldn't do to somebody else. And that's understood by many as the focus of Yahavtarecha Kamocha, the whole slew of concepts that come up from that. And that could possibly be the source for Nezikin. Rav Kook has a tshuva in which he suggests that that's the source for the Hezek She'enu Nikra, the Gemara sometimes talk about. If you mazik something in a way that no one can tell, let's say you make something non-kosher, or you make something prohibited bahana, or you somehow reduce the value of something in a way that somebody looks at it and they can't tell. It looks the exact same as it was before. So there's a question what exactly that represents, and does that fall into any other category? So Rav Kook says he understands it, that should be a violation of Yahavtarecha Kamocha. You certainly wouldn't want somebody doing that to your property, so you shouldn't do it to somebody else's property. And he has some interesting ramifications how categorizing it that way may affect things, but it might be a useful discussion in some other contexts as well. Maybe we'll come back to that in a future discussion. But that says Rav Kook writes, certainly at least for this type of Nezikin, for Hezek She'ein HaNikar, where there's no perceivable issue, that is apparently a subset of the Haftarecha Kamocha. So Yad Ramah, who is the first one to say this, that the Haftarecha Kamocha is a part of it, is really the source, he throws in another possibility there also, Lufne'iver lo sutein mitzvah. That Torah says we're not supposed to put a stumbling block in front of the blind. So the question, what exactly that means? We normally understand that most common usage is the drasha, the Chazal have, the Gemara, and Barazara, and Tzachim, that you're not supposed to help somebody do an aver. If a person is spiritually blind, the person has a tendency to do something wrong, so you're not supposed to help them along that path by tripping him up spiritually, and that's the most common usage. Seems like it should have a literal meaning as well. It's the whole discussion if that's the case or not. But it seems like if you put a rock in front of somebody who doesn't see, then you make them fall, then that should also be a prohibition also. So one could see that as a broader theme, that putting dangerous things out there that are causing dangerous things to happen is a violation of Lufnei Evel Osite Mitzvah. So that's apparently what the Yad Ramah is saying, and that's also a comment Meshech Chachma has. Meshech Chachma writes somewhere that if you make a bore, if you make a pit in a public place, that's a violation of Lufnei Evel Osite Mitzvah. If you do it in your house, it's a violation of Losasim Dam V'Eshachem. It's related, so you shouldn't have a dangerous situation in your house. Outside your house, as you said, let's be evil, see 10 next one, it tells you can't put it out in a public thoroughfare. The Chasam Sofer, in his Chuvas, has an interesting idea. He's talking about that Rashba that we mentioned earlier that talks about a Sophic issue. So the Chasam Sofer suggests that the relevant principle here is Loishamar al-Dam Re'echa and V'nishmartam al-Olun Afshazeichem, that you're not supposed to stand by what other people get hurt, and you're not supposed to have a dangerous situation in general. So the Chasam Sofer suggests that the whole principle of Nezikin, of the Avos Nezikin, of being obligated to pay, because all of that is in a sense a Hachakam and HaTorah. The Torah is making a Shiag, is making a safeguard, that really we don't want people killing themselves, we don't want people getting hurt. So how do we make sure that people won't have a dangerous environment? If we let people have their oxen running around, if we let people set fires wherever they want, if we let people make a pit in the middle of the street, so there's a good chance that somebody's going to get hurt. There's a good chance somebody's going to fall in and get burnt and get gored. How do we make sure people aren't going to do that? So we say, we stop things a step ahead of time. We say that if this should happen to hurt property, if there should be some property damage from any of these reasons, so you're going to have to pay. So a person's going to think, okay, I don't want to have to pay for somebody's property. I'll make sure I don't have a bore, I don't have a shore, I don't have a mava, I don't have any of these things. And then the world will be a safer place, and then people will be less likely to get hurt as they die because of what's out there. Because we stopped things a step beforehand, we made you pay for damages. So essentially, what's he saying? He's saying that this is an extension of the theme that we have of not hurting people, to keep us a step away from hurting people. So we make sure that even property damage is something you're liable for, and therefore that's all a part of Losama Damayacha and of Nishmartim Albanach and Seifa. Soloveitchik was quoted in the Missouri Journal as saying that Losama Damayacha is the source, but it comes from a different angle, not from the complicated Torah that the Chum Sofer has. But the idea being that if you read the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, when the Rambam tells you what's the issue of Los Amar Adam Re'echa, so the Rambam says that you're not allowed to stand by when somebody is at risk. And Damim we understand in both senses of the word. Dam means blood, and you can't stand when somebody is at risk of bodily harm. And Damim in the Talmudic language means money. So somebody's money or somebody's body is at risk, so you can't stand by and let it happen. So what's going on? So it's a simple kal v'chomer apparently, that if you see somebody's stuff about to get damaged, you're not allowed to stand by and let it happen. So it makes sense that you can't do it yourself. It can't be that you're not allowed to watch it, but you're allowed to do it. So it must be that if you're not allowed to let it happen, so you're not allowed to do it yourself. That's certainly understood as part of this concept. So there are many other achronim who say a very similar idea, not from that source, but from another source. That the source might be Hashavas Avedas, because the Gemara has a similar statement in that context, that Hashavas Aveda doesn't only mean that if you find something lost, you should return it, but if you see an item about to be destroyed, so then you should save it beforehand, you should stop it from being destroyed. That's Hashavas Avedas. There's a whole slew of Achronim, the Chelkis Yoav and the Rashash, and the Sipler, and that piece I mentioned before, and the first piece in Bava Kamma, that all invoke this as a possible source, that's the idea. The Kal V'chomer from Hashavas Aveda, that you can't stand by and let something get damaged, so for sure you're not allowed to damage it in the first place. So some Machronim weren't so convinced this is enough of a source. Rav Nachman Gestetner in his Sefer on Sugyos, so he points out that there are times when Hashavas Aveda is not an obligation. So for example, if it's going to cost you more to return the property than that person would have lost, you're not obligated to show the surveillance. So maybe I could say that if I'll benefit more from damaging your property, then maybe I could do it. And maybe I could think of myself first, and therefore the whole Kal V'chomer is not going to work. In general, the fact, really broader question that one could ask about this, is the whole nature of our question is really establishing the monetary issue alone. That Hashavas Aveda, you have to pay back, you have to stop it, you have to replace what's lost. So my whole premise here is I'm willing to pay. Just how do I know I'm not allowed to do that and pay back? So to say that Hashavas Aveda is a source for an issue, even when you're going to cover the monetary damage, maybe I could hear it's a little bit questionable. Maybe it's a question whether that's going to be enough of a source. There's also Vilna Gaon in his Bir HaGra, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, he suggests that the issue is Medivei Kabbalah. Because there is a discussion the Gemara has in the beginning of the sixth parak of Bava Kamma, where the Gemara raises the question, a very significant discussion, even if it don't really pass him like it's straight on, but the Gemara has a discussion there whether one is allowed to steal somebody's property or damage somebody's property in order to save their life. Is it Mutter Lahatul Asma B'mamun Chaveiro? And it's a question what exactly the issue in the Gemara is. Are we really trying to say that maybe I can't even save my life at the expense of somebody else's money? Or does it mean maybe that I have to pay back if I do that? So that's a whole discussion, but the whole source from a story about David HaMelech, a story we find in the Navi, So the Gerash suggests that that whole story from David HaMelech, that's a source midirei Kabbalah, from the tradition, from the Nevi'im, that you can't damage somebody's property. And then the question is, Pikuach Nefesh allowed or not, but the whole premise seems to be that there's an issue of Nezikim that comes from David HaMelech. So again, it's questionable whether that works or not. I think there's nothing to say in the place of that also. Because here again, if the premise is that you are paying back, so whether there still is an issue to begin with, it's a little bit hard to say for sure. That's the question the Gemara asks. Are you allowed to? So it's unclear what is the question. Is the question to say that we would really consider saying you're not allowed to? Or are we saying that no, you're allowed to, but it's still usher, meaning that you had to do it, but you have to pay for it afterwards. Because it was still not your, you didn't have the right to take the property for that purpose. So the Gemara's point is that the whole discussion and the whole story from David HaMelech that the Gemara is using is an indication that there's some problem of damaging somebody's property. And then, whether it's permitted in these circumstances or not, we could then have that discussion. But right. So we are, if for all intents and purposes, yes, do not try this at home, then pikuach nefesh dochas hakol, although it's an interesting discussion to have, like there is at least this half bahavne, there's also, I mean, there are other sources that kind of sound like this also, but practically speaking, you know, don't act on it, or Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva that there's no way this is anything to happen. But there is some discussion that maybe there's two different realms, that Pekuach Nefesh Do'ach HaKol means between you and God. God will let you be Mechal Shabbos, God will let you be trade. Maybe this other guy won't, and that one will just steal his stuff. So the question is, do you steal his stuff in order to save your life? So presumably what it would mean even is that you still, what you have to do, you still have to save your life. But maybe it wasn't mutter, you still have to pay him back. Masha'in came Shabbos, you don't have to do shuva for being Mechal Shabbos and bringing trades because God said it was okay. But this guy's still screaming, you still have to pay him back. And that's the question, do you have to pay him back or not? It's a whole separate discussion, but it comes largely out of that Sugya and Bava Kama and Kumar and Subas as well. It's a discussion of itself. So one could suggest, and I just suggest this now, we're running out of time, and one could suggest that maybe, okay, it could be any of these things, it could be all these things, it could be none of these things. But maybe the point is that it doesn't really matter. The question is, let's say I were to say it's all of these things, it's three of these things, five of these things. So still you're left with the same question. So why is it that I have to search so hard? Why isn't this in Parshas Mishpatim? Why doesn't the Torah say, don't damage, and if you do, you have to pay? So I think the answer is that, if I'm going to come up to somebody's car with a sledgehammer and smash his window in, so yes, I probably violated the Haftarech Kamoch and Derech Adrech Enom, and it was Baltashkos, and it was, and it was the Haftarech Kamoch, and it was all these things, and maybe those things all. Yeah, I would have violated all those things. But that's not why I'm chayav to pay. I'm chayav to pay because of the Parshas HaNezikin, which is not a function of prohibition. It's a function of something else. It's a function of the fact that anytime something gets damaged, somebody has bad luck, and usually it's the person who owns the property. If there's a tornado and you don't have insurance, that's the show. And if something happens to your house, so then you have bad luck, right? So then you have a monetary loss. So the chayav for the Torah is that if somebody bears some level of responsibility for the situation, so he gets the bad luck. Maybe he gets all the bad luck, maybe he gets half the bad luck, maybe it depends on the circumstance, but it's not a function of the prohibition. It's not a function of having done something wrong. You could, in addition to this, do something wrong. So if you do it on purpose, then it probably will be any one of five or six things. But whether or not you do it on purpose, then there's still a function of this obligation to watch. And that's how Rav Baruch Ber suggests. Rav Baruch quotes from Chaim Brisker in the Sefer and Bava Kama, the Rekha Shmuel and Bava Kama in Siman Beis, that the Pasuk in Mishpatim, in our Parsha, does say that, I think in the context of Shor Tam, V'lo Yishmerenu Bailo, or Muad, V'lo Yishmerenu Bailo, that his Bailo did not watch it, and that caused the problem. So you see, for the Torah, it's an obligation to watch Atan and Ezekiel, and if you fail to watch, so then you are liable for the consequences. You're liable for the bad luck, and that's perhaps the point. Not necessarily that it's because of an action that you did, which could be grouped together with it also. But without a assertive action, so there's still the problem of not sufficiently protecting against it, and that's really the basis for everything. Zalman Chaim Goldberg has an article somewhere where he suggests that's also why the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, that Adam Ul Olam Ben Erben Yashem Ben Shogi Ben Ezi, that a person, unlike an ox, which has different status, a person is always considered to be Mu'ad, is always considered to be a danger, whether he's awake or whether he's asleep, whether he knows what he's doing or doesn't know what he's doing. It's a very unusual idea. The idea that you could be liable for something you do when you're asleep. So you turn over in the middle of the night and you smash something. So that's really unprecedented. We don't find that in Hilchos Shabbos. We don't find that in any other area of halacha that you're liable for what you do when you're asleep. So he suggested that that's the point. That this is not about averus. If it's about averus, so then yes, you can't be liable for something that you do when you have no consciousness. But if it's about negligence, so then in theory we could say that you're negligent even without doing anything else wrong. And therefore there can be a liability because yes, you were asleep. Your action at the time is not considered to be an action. It's not considered to be conscious. But you are liable for going to sleep next to this priceless Chinese vase. And in fact, in the quotes from Yerushalmi, that this Gemara may not apply if you went to sleep first and somebody put it next to your pillow afterwards. So that kind of highlights the point that it's not necessarily saying that, oh, it's just automatic, your action is always liable. It's not about your actions, it's about the situation and your negligence, and if that negligence is removed, then in theory one can suggest that the Isser doesn't, doesn't apply. It's not necessarily tied into the definition of an action that we find before Hazara Kula. So those are some of the perspectives. You notice that Rav Asher Weiss and Sefer HaNechumish has a little bit of a different perspective on this, but he starts off his discussion saying that there must be an Isser because there's a Chiyuv, so it must be an Isser. Why would there be a Chiyuv without an Isser? So really we're saying a little bit the opposite, that the Merachamim, the Chiyuv is separate from the Isser, and the Isser can come from two places, no places, six places, doesn't matter. They're all separate from the chiyuv, which is more a function of something else. But all of these, and again, so I'm fulfillment of this idea of l'chaim milei de nezikin, the study of what the nezikin are about, brings us through a tour of all of these various concepts of chassidus. So we won't chaz the beginning part, just chaz the second part. We talked about these sources in the time we have. So it talks about the question of, in addition to the chiyuvim of nezikin, the arba avos nezikin, or how many avos there turn out to be in the first part of the Kama. So, is there an isser to do it? If you purposely smash somebody's window, is that prohibited? So it sounds like it is. It sounds like it is from the Rambam. It sounds like it is from the Bach and the Mordechai's Psoledis. It sounds like from the Rashi and Bava Kama that it's treated as a Suffolk isser. It sounds like from the Gemara and Kedusha and the Ancient Echot Varavera by damages. It sounds like from all of that that there is an isser. So the question is, what isser are we talking about? So we mentioned at first that the disciple rejects Baal Tashkas as a possibility because it applies to your own stuff and then it doesn't apply if it's the Sarah. And we thought maybe don't be so quick to throw it out because it could be that the Midah that was the Sefer Achina Price, the Midah of being a destructive person, is very much what's bothering us here. Maybe that is relevant. And the Hanami, if you do it to your own stuff, so it's still Asher, but it's no touch moment. If you do it to somebody else's stuff, it's Asher with touch moment. And it's not so different from what the Rush writes in his Chuvah, that Derechah Derechah Noam is the idea, so the same, different pasuk, but the same idea, that Baal Tashkas and Derechah Derechah Noam could both be about this destructive quality being involved. Then we consider the possibility that it might be Los Igzol, what Rabbeinu Yonah writes in his Parish to Pirkei Avos, but it's a chiddush to say it's Los Igzol if there's no property being held onto, and even Rabbeinu Yonah himself writes a chiddush, that's what his point is, that we need Moshe in order to teach us these things that we wouldn't know from the Pesukim. I mentioned that the Ran in the Sechus Bavakamo also, and Ran in the Sanhedrin, also sounds like this in applying this to Shev Mitzvah Noach, talking about Chavala specifically, that this is one of Shev Mitzvah Noach because the subset of Gezel. Now we mentioned also the possibility of the Ahavta Re'echa Kamocha, as Yad Ramah introduces, and the Ahavta Re'echa Kamocha, as many understood, has to be a negative, even though it sounds very positive, but it's hard to describe Kamocha in a positive sense. Nobody can do it, so we could say in a negative sense, don't do to others what you wouldn't have done to yourself, so therefore for Nezikin that works out very well. And we mentioned of Cook's Truva about how this could explain, at least for Hezek She'ena Nikr, if it's not something we could perceive, how that could possibly be the source. And then we mentioned Chassan Sofer, that it's one just that we got him also mentioned the din of Lufna Iver, and we mentioned how the Chavarashah Chachma says Lufna Iver is for a barber shusarab, meaning in your house it's Losas and Damim, but it's a literal reading of Lufna Iver, not only the broader meaning of not helping somebody to spiritually trip up, but physically don't trip people, and broader than that, all the different ways in which you would cause harm, presumably included within Lufna Iver. And then we mentioned the Chassan Sofer's Chuvah, that's all a function of Losam al Dam Re'acha, and of an Shmart Mal Nafshas Eichem, that we don't want people to get hurt. So if we want to keep dangerous things away from people, if we say that you're liable for damages to property, that'll keep you from having dangerous stuff around, and therefore people shouldn't get hurt either. And I mentioned that Rasul Beishik also used the pasuk of Lo Shana Adam Re'echa, but in a different sense, where the Rambam tells us that it's not only about life, it's also about property. And in both cases, you can't stand by and let it happen. So the Kavachom, you can't do it yourself. And that's how a lot of us Achronim said also, but not about that, but about Hashavas Aveda, that Kavachom from Hashavas Aveda seems to be enough of a source. Others question that because, again, you're ready to pay back, and also Hashavas Aveda has exceptions, and we're not sure if we're ready to apply those exceptions to the din of Mizikin. And we mentioned also the Gra. The Gra said that Medivrei Kabbalah is the source, the whole story of David HaMelech, that the Gemara Bava Kamma wants to quote as a possible source to say that you can't steal somebody else's stuff in order to save your life, or maybe even not, maybe pay back, whatever it is, that all of that might also possibly be a source. And then we suggested that it could be that really all of these amenities are relevant, doesn't matter. If you do it on purpose, you could violate many of these things. But even if you don't, there's still a problem anyway, that this is a reflection of your negligence, and that that's, as the Birkei Shmuel quotes from Chaim, as the Pasuk says, the Lo Yishmerenu Bailav, that here you're chayav because you did not protect the object from harming, and that's what Zalman Chaim points out. That's why the Mishnah says that a person is chayav even if he's asleep, even though in any other area of halacha we wouldn't say that something you do when you're asleep is considered an action. Here we don't need an action, we need negligence, so your act of going to sleep next to something fragile is negligence, and that's why the Rishalmi says that it doesn't apply if you went to sleep first and the item was put there afterwards. And this is a little different than Rabbi Asher Weiss understands, because he starts off on the premise that there has to be an Isra because of the Chiyas. So we're saying maybe a little bit differently, that maybe the Chiyas can be independent of the Isra, and that the Chiyas represents this negligence, which you could then formulate as an Isra, that negligence itself is an Isra, but that that's really a circular idea, that that's what it's about. And then on top of that, there's all these other concepts, which if one does it with a mice on purpose, then one could in theory invoke any of these other concepts which would also be relevant, and again allowing us to fulfill the Nezikin, the topic of Nezikin takes us through all these sources. Have a wonderful week. We'll run down tonight, and all should be very well.